So what's brought you to see The Sound of Music?
Well, you know, I was thinking as we were walking, I think my mother was in Germany for years and years with my father in the military, and she just talked about it all the time and talked about Salzburg. And
yeah,
I think that's one big draw. And then, and just like in the movie, you know, it kind of takes me back to a simpler time. Obviously, there's the dark part of the end of the movie and what they're escaping and
right.
Nazis, but just how beautiful the landscape is. You know, I don't think you can find that anywhere in the States.
No.
And it's just like a dream of how beautiful it is. And,
yeah.
And a nice village in the middle of the mountains.
Yeah. I mean, do you think in one of the, I was watching the commentary mm-hmm. that sometimes films have, and you can listen to the director talk about decisions they've made for the film. And the director was talking about the opening scenes and how that's been such a draw for people.
Yeah.
Because you get to see the grandeur of the Alps and yeah. from that aerial view. And then the rest of the film, you're in them, right? You're in Salzburg. Is that kind of something that's...
Absolutely. I would agree with that 100%, is that first opening scene, it was really the draw for me.
Yeah.
I think that was the biggest part. Just, again, the beauty
right.
of everything.
And it really, the physical landscape dominates, whereas even though we're in a pretty big size city
of
Salzburg,
yeah.
it's very much kind of made to seem small in comparison.
Village-like.
Yeah, in comparison to yeah. these huge mountains.
Absolutely.
And kind of, yeah, that proportion, I guess, if you yeah. will, between the natural landscape and the cultural landscape is... That
Absolutely.
Natural landscape is such bigger. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Welcome to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. Our show is an hour-long radio essay program broadcast monthly from Radio Fabrique in Salzburg, Austria. This public geography project presents a spatial way of thinking about our relationships with the worlds we inhabit and co-create. Each episode takes a theme, or perhaps a question, and explores it through an interactive dialogue with different texts and voices. I'm your host, Kevin S. Fox. In tonight's episode, episode 6, we call it In Maria's Footsteps, as we explore the sound of music 50 years later here in Salzburg. The 1965 film, The Sound of Music, has captured the imagination of millions of viewers from around the world. Starring Julie Andrews as Maria von Trapp and Christopher Plummer as the captain, this Rodgers and Hammerstein musical won 5 Oscars and featured favorite songs that have become household classics. Edelweiss, My Favorite Things, Climb Every Mountain, Do Re Mi, and of course the title song, Sound of Music. It was filmed in 1964 here in Salzburg, but made its screen debut in March of 1965. It's beat Gone with the Wind as the highest grossing film of all time. Here in Salzburg, we celebrate the film's 50 years this month. The film is place-bound, I guess, in a way. It represents an actual landscape, an actual place. It's filmed in Salzburg and tries to highlight the region and talk about it in the film. Take the Untersberg, for example. Maria, after pointing out to us how alive the hills are around Salzburg, she climbs down this iconic mountain only to be late to Mass at the Abbey. Director Robert Wise also chose to showcase the Salzburg alpine landscape with the high mountains and deep lakes, glacial lakes, in the first minutes of the film. I think in a way presenting the country, the terrain, the territory, both political and natural, in which the rest of the film navigates. I think, too, it's an introduction into the interior landscapes of Maria. Now, those songs I mentioned might not be household classics here in Austria. The film has been dismissed, perhaps, as having too much of an American sensibility. Hollywood sometimes can ruin these old world ideals and traditions. Whether it's the misinterpretation of the Austro-Hungarian soul, maybe the facts surrounding the lives of the Von Trapps, or the Edelweiss song, Austrians don't seem to like it at all. But I think here is missing, and part of the reason for doing this episode, is an understanding of what the film could mean to people, especially people coming here from abroad, and it's not just from North America and other parts of Europe, but Asia as well. People who've been enchanted by the film, by the story of Maria Von Trapp, the personal journey perhaps, and maybe seeing in that personal journey a mirror for their own journey in this life. And so in a recent conversation with a local from here, from Austria, we started to discuss a little bit this idea of film location pilgrimages, if you will, or film tourism. And he used an example of being in an Australian national park where, amongst other natural and cultural sites, they were shown where Michael J. Crocodile Dundee had saved the character Sue Charlton from a hungry crocodile. But this isn't the same kind of film pilgrimage that I'm talking about. I think Sound of Music offers up something entirely different, a deeper kind of connection to a mythology, perhaps, a narrative that has, in some ways, a healing effect on those who walk in Maria's footsteps. So stick with us tonight as we continue to explore the Sound of Music landscape and continue to ask the question, well, what does it mean to leave home and come here to Salzburg to see the sites where your favorite film, a film that's moved you so much, to see where it was filmed, to walk perhaps in some of the places where Julie Andrews walked and where Maria Von Trapp walked as well. We are guided by Peter von Wertheim of Bob's Special Tours and see some of the iconic places, the iconic sites seen so much in the film. And he gives us a historical background and describes the life of the Von Trapps and describes the film in its reception here in Austria. I get a chance to ask him, too, about his many years of giving tours and what it is that he sees that brings people here and what it is that they go home with. I also speak with a number of different tour participants that I was with on my tour to get an idea and get their insight into, well, what it is that brought them here and what it is that brought them to seek out the Sound of Music landscape. Lastly, I bring in the voice of Joseph Pallas, cultural geographer, whose work on film and geography will really help us contextualize this in a larger way and will help us kind of explore this geographically. You're listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. If you want to check us out on the web, we're at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Now let's go listen from geographer Dr. Joseph Pallas.
When The Sound of Music was filmed in 1964 and was released in 1965, not too many people realize it was based on the musical by Rodgers and Hammerstein and starred Mary Martin as Maria Von Trapp in the stage musical. She won the Tony Award for her performance, but when it was translated into the film version starring Julie Andrews as Maria Von Trapp, it made an even more indelible mark. Julie Andrews, who won the Academy Award the previous year for playing a nanny or another governess named Mary Poppins, was even more convincing as Maria von Trapp the next year for The Sound of Music, taking care of the children of the captain with the seven children, as she sang in the movie. And no wonder, when that movie came out, many people were humming the songs from the movie, which was based on the musical, and has made it an instant classic. No wonder when people realized that the film was filmed in Salzburg. They visit Salzburg precisely also, aside from other things, of course. They visit Salzburg because they want to relive the experiences that they felt by watching the movie in their own time. So film tourism is one of the effects of when the popularity of the film translates to consumerism. This subfield in field geography has been studied many times before. The Lord of the Rings, many people go to New Zealand to see the Middle Earth and came out a little bit disappointed when they found out that some of the large infrastructures right there were actually computer-generated imageries and not the real thing. Same with Cleopatra. The movie set is still around, the one that was starred by Elizabeth Taylor. The Sound of Music, the fans of the movie relieved the film by going to the sites where filming reportedly occurred. It is like trying to get an artifact where a film fan gathers artifacts about the movie by going to actual film sites. Of course, this is tied up to the consumerism, like I said earlier, and the growth of a cottage industry of collecting memorabilia. And I'm sure there are a lot of memorabilia that has been sold because of the popularity of the film. So film tourism is definitely one of the offshoots of The Sound of Music. The other aspect that is also interesting about film tourism is that it never seems to wane. The popularity of the film only seems to grow by the years. This year, in 2015, it will celebrate its 50th anniversary in March. If you watch the Academy Awards recently, where Lady Gaga sang a medley of the songs from The Sound of Music, you could tell that the reaction of the audience after she sang the song is a testament to the timelessness of the movie. And even more so when Dame Julie Andrews came out finally and pay homage to Lady Gaga for singing the song and proceeded to talk about her experiences making the movie. It reinforces what many of us know, that Maria von Trapp is herself an icon, and The Sound of Music is our story that we want to relive over and over again.
So what better way to relive that story, our story, than by being in it and being on a tour here in Salzburg? Let's join the tour I was on a couple sites in, at one of the more iconic places in the film.
All my guests have watched the film for hundreds of times.
Yeah.
Easy. Here we have the garden terrace where they were drinking the pink lemonade with Baroness Schroeder and Uncle Max.
Oh,
then
wow.
You see the balcony which inspired them for the Landler dance scenes when they separate from the group. And then on the first floor there is the marble hall which you know from the ballroom dancing scenes and the puppet theater scenes. We shall not forget that Maria, as the new wife of Captain Trapp, entered the high society with the festival, and it is true that she experienced her first dinner dance here at Leopoldskron with her husband together, and she was a bit intimidated first with the with the Rockefellers, Vanderbilts and others, and she couldn't speak English. The captain knew about English because of his first wife, Lady Whitehead, and so it was not so difficult for him, but for Maria. And that is a bit in the film scenes, you know, how shy Maria is with the high society and the jet set. the gazebo has been originally over there at the garden park and couldn't be used for the indoor scenes dancing at the gazebo because it's too small. That was a misunderstanding by Cable. The film team cabled to a carpenter here in Salzburg, we need a gazebo, and did not inform him that they wanted to dance inside the gazebo, because our gazebos are very small, and usually you do not equip them with glass windows. So he made a normal gazebo, and that was available here, and that was wrong, because they tried to do the scenes, and even the actress for being the Liesel got badly hurt with her ankle, and then they said, no, let it be, because this is too dangerous. And then they replicated parts of the gazebo at the studios, and there they did the filming of the scenes dancing at the gazebo. Here is a man-made pond or lake, the Leopoldskron Lake, which is about 35 inches deep, so that was perfect for the boat scenes. You remember when they fell out into the water. And the Leopoldskron Palace dates back to 1736. It was a summer palace of Bishop Leopold von Firmian. The architect was his nephew, Lactanz von Firmian, who studied architecture in Paris and brought into Salzburg the French Rococo style, because this is the rare exception of French Rococo in Salzburg. All over the city is dominated by Italian Baroque architecture. So Max Reinhardt enjoyed it greatly to take over this building for his festival, Glamorous Society, and the film team was fond of the gorgeous ambience. But, you see, it is not a yellow front side. And the trap house is yellow, and yellow is a typical Italian color for Salzburg. So the director said, we need a yellow front side, a facade for the filming. And so they, Maria assisted again with the suggestion, they went to the Frohnburg estate, and there in front of the house they did the filming. That is the front side of the trap house for the film scenes. At that time it was private property owned by the family of Count Kühnburg. Today it is the property of the Music University Mozarteum here in Salzburg. And we have here the lane with the trees where the kids were hanging in from the trees. Oh. You remember? Yeah. We see it here. They climbed the trees here. And we will see again a lane with trees in Monsey. Very often they did a similar scene at another place, and then they made a cut, a compilation, so it's very often hard to identify the venues. And the compilations are typical for the film business.
Right.
That's always a bit confusing. And we go then to this direction, to the southeast, to the Lake and Mountain District, Salzkammergut.
This is Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. For more information about the show, check us out on the web at www.geographicalimaginations.org. There you can read our blog and stay up to date with new features. And also check out the episodes tab, where we archive all the past episodes for you to listen to at your convenience. Now, let's get back to the episode tonight, In Maria's Footsteps. And on our way to the Lake District, we stopped by the Schloss Hellbrunn, and I had a chance to talk with a number of the guests on the tour.
You know, when was the first time you saw Sound of Music? I mean, were you young?
Yeah, I was probably 10.
Yeah?
I was even younger than that, because I was living in Virginia, so I was... Oh, yeah, we met when we were three, yeah.
Oh, so you got lifelong friends.
Oh, yeah, we just both turned 40, so...
All right.
Yes, this is our dream. gosh, I was It was younger than the third grade. Because my parents actually, my mom was really excited to show it to us. And you cry. We had a couch that pulled out into a bed.
Yeah.
And she let us stay up late, and it was the first time that we got to stay up late and watch a movie. And it was a big deal.
Yeah.
It was a really big deal.
I mean, is it, a lot of people say they revisit a book.
Yeah. Oh, I watch this movie all the time.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like a happy place kind of thing for me.
Yeah.
Oh, honey, you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
And it helps kind of measure your life in some ways, right? And, I mean, if you've seen it early in your childhood,
yes,
so you could revisit that.
Yeah.
And
it was something I showed to my daughter very early, too, because I wanted her to have that same experience and memory. I think it might have been her first non-cartoon movie that she ever saw.
Right.
I think she quite got most of it, but she loved the singing and the dancing and the when they fell out of the boat kind of thing.
Right.
But it was definitely something I wanted to share with her as well. I think it's a generational thing. I actually was supposed to go on this tour with my mom and my sister and our girls.
Uh-huh.
I have an 8-year-old, 7-year-old girl.
How old is your sister?
My sister has twin girls that are 7, and then she has a little girl who's 3. And we said when they turn 16, we were going to take them up on this trip.
So they were 16 going on 17.
Yes.
Right.
So
right.
When I found out we were moving to Germany, it just became, well, how am I going to avoid not going before?
Yeah.
And
so she drags her best friend.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, willingly drags her best friend.
We both came to for your birthdays, and parents are like, let's go do it.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, that's something I've always wanted to do. And it's now here.
Now here.
No, was the film, is it something that you would watch every year, like around Christmas time? Is it that part of your family?
Oh, yeah. Seriously.
Mine is not contingent on time of year. It's more contingent on I don't think we're supposed to go that way any longer. More contingent on my mood.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I feel like seeing this.
Yeah.
And I haven't shown it to my son yet. He's only 2.
Yeah.
And he's the attention span of a little year old. But I think thinking about Riley watching it and him getting amusement out of like the boat scenes and all that, as I've watched it over and over again, the things that I've noticed or have more associated with have changed. Because, you know, the boat's funny, and I still like that, but, like, the evolution of the relationship of Maria and the captain.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, different stages of your life and things that are more important, or as you grow up. I would say, if I had to make it more of an intellectual thing than just my escape of, I know every facial expression of Christopher Plummer in that movie, and my dad and I had a long-running joke. I was just saying this to you, that the How Do You Solve a Problem Like Maria song, he's like, we're totally playing that for you when you walk down the aisle at your wedding. I was like, thanks, Dad. But, you know.
And how many times would you say you've seen the movie?
50?
Yeah. And we'll put it on for a little bit for my daughter, because she seems to like the beginning of it more than the ending of it, because the ending's a little dark.
Right.
But her favorite is definitely the thunder scene when they're in the bed together.
Yeah.
That's usually when she's kind of like, okay, I'm ready to move on to something else.
Yeah. Well, that's a big scene, too, because it kind of warms up. That's where
the family,
the frigidness kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you know every line?
Almost.
Yeah.
We actually have the CD and listened to it on the way down here. And my daughter probably knows every word as well, too. Just because it was something that was important to me. And they're good lyrics. They're clean lyrics. It's fun. It's not. It's adult music. It's not the Wiggles or.
Yeah, right.
Things are not rhyming.
Yeah, exactly.
Always.
Right. But yeah, I definitely listen to the soundtrack at least once a month.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Can we walk up towards the castle
on our walk out here?
Yeah.
What about you? What's your draw to this?
I'll
interview you.
Yeah, no.
to be an interviewer.
It really is about, like, in some ways, I guess what I'm interested in is people in seeing something in a film.
Mm-hmm.
Are we kind of on, like, almost, is this like a pilgrimage?
Mm-hmm.
For you to come.
Absolutely.
I don't know about for you.
To see it.
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely.
To be in the sights, yeah, that are in that film.
Yes. Absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah.
And it's not so much from a geographical perspective for me. It's much more, this movie is a happy place for me. And
yeah,
seeing it and almost feeling like I'm a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's lovely and it's relaxing.
Yeah.
I'm not a big celebrity, like, ooh, let's, yeah, seek this out. Like, this to me, like, these scenes were so beautiful. I'd never seen the Alps. I have a cabin in West Virginia. That's a hill. like,
a few thousand feet difference.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, our longest run is 2 miles on the mountain. It's not like this.
Snowshoe.
Timberline, but not far. The area is so beautiful. So I guess I can take a little bit back from what I said about a non-geographic thing, is that this is gorgeous. Absolutely spectacular. There is nothing like these castles and that kind of stuff in America. I mean, we have the Biltmore and a couple castle-esque places.
Right.
But certainly not with the backdrop of mountains.
Right. Winter's very good. Yeah, I mean, I guess, so a little bit of the attraction is to come to see the Alps, but it's more about the personal geography of that film.
Yes.
And your experience.
I would have, like, gone anywhere in the world to see where the sound of it was filmed.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's here makes it all that more special.
Yeah.
I think.
Listening to Geographical Imaginations, Brief Expeditions into the Geographies of Everything and Nothing. For more information about our show, check us out at our website, www.geographicalimaginations.org. Now let's get back to Maria's footsteps.
People know the Sound of Music so much, they commit that to memory, they know the scenes of the movie, the songs, even certain speech patterns. When Maria will take a breath, will take a break, when she speaks certain, when she mouths certain lines, people know that so well. But what's even more powerful is the fact that when you marry that sound or music with the actual visual, which is in the film, the image, it creates such a very hallucinatory experience for the people who never get tired of watching the movie over and over again. When they see Austria as embodied in the film, they try to look for those same images. The film memory gets to be superimposed on this filmed landscape. They want things to happen. They wanted to see those familiar sights. Even if they didn't look exactly as it was in the movie, it doesn't matter. When there's a cultural marker that says, this was where they filmed Doremi. This is where they filmed when they were singing Edelweiss.
So let's get back on the bus, head out to the Lake District, and then sit down with Peter von Wertheim, our tour guide, to hear about his experiences over the years with Sound of Music pilgrims.
Well, the Salzburg Tourism Agency has survey made that about 300,000 guests every year visit Salzburg only for Sound of Music. It's one of the main attractions. One could say Mozart is out, Salzburg and Sound of Music is in, and it's more the Sound of Music than the Sound of Mozart, more and more for the young generations. Of course, it's a nice way to approach Salzburg because, by the way, you get to know Salzburg and you are interested in the Mozart topics and in the history of Salzburg. But the main attraction, the emotional attraction, is Sound of Music, that you decide to come to Salzburg.
And in terms of those visitors, the ones that you get to meet, would you say, are there just as many men as women? Are the age groups, are the older people? And where are they from, too?
Well, it's interesting. You have a mix of generations and you have a mix of gender because you have, I would say, 65% female guests. But, of course, the couples, the husbands, the partners, they are joining and sometimes they tell me, oh, stay away from that cheesy Sound of Music. And then I say, no, our tour is different because you get to know the true story, the history of the Trapp family of Austria, Salzburg, and you get an insight to the background world, so that it is a really living experience of their world and the true Sound of Music. And that changes then the approach so that they say, oh, I'm looking forward to it now. So this changes completely. It's the opener that I start to give them an idea of this tour so that they don't worry about too hooky, cheesy Sound of Music things.
And most of those visitors, you think, coming from United States or North America?
I would say North America is very strong, but don't forget the Asian countries. They are deeply in love with Sound of Music, and I would say it's a phenomenon which goes around the globe. We hosted already all nations you can imagine. It's really impressive how deeply people feel for the Sound of Music story and how it affects their inner emotions, and it's a souvenir of childhood. And very often they had attended international schools, so they learned about Sound of Music, and the songs of Sound of Music have been their first steps to music. It motivated them to go on music and singing at home.
Yeah. And so I guess the film probably affects people in different ways. I'm curious, what are some of the, if we can get at what's going through people while they're on the tour, like what kind of questions do they ask? What are some of the classic questions that you get?
Well, one of the first questions is, how old was Maria when she entered the convent? How old was she when she got married to the captain? How many kids did they have? How was the family life? How was the escape? Because we know that there is the fictional escape drama and the true story. Then, of course, how was the relationship between the captain and Maria? Age difference was almost 22 years. So that is very often a topic which is a question for women. They want to know, sometimes they have an elder partner, and so they want to know, how did this work with Captain Trapp and Maria? These are the classic questions. Then very often when we come to the countryside, people want to see exactly the spot where Julie Andrews was standing for the famous song, The Hills Are Alive. Well, the problem is movie making is an illusion. It's a work of illusion, and they do a collage of scenes, a compilation of scenes. So it is sometimes really a big mess what they combined and cut together, which does not exist in the true life. And so it's sometimes a bit difficult to serve the expectations at the first moment, but then people are stunned by the beauty of the landscape and they feel the vibes of the true story of the Trapp family and Sound of Music. So then everything is calmed and changed as soon as they enter the countryside.
Yeah, but it does maybe upset some people to see, how about like how far apart some of the places, because the film might give the illusion too that Maria climbs down from Untersberg to make it to Mass at the Abbey, but yet we know just even by being on the tour just now that that's at least, what, 6 kilometers away from the foot of Untersberg to to the Nuremberg Abbey.
Well, it's interesting. The film scenes are much more dramatic than the stage play on the Broadway. And I had the pleasure to go through old streams on YouTube showing a bit of the Broadway production, which was not so dramatic. So the expectation of some people who don't know the Broadway stage play is stronger. They want to have this drama, this action, as you said, coming down from the Untersberg and being too late for the mass at the chapel. And others who know the stage play from their childhood, from the Broadway, or they had watched a film of the stage play, that's more moderated, I would say, and they don't have such overdone expectations. The film creates very strong illusions.
You're listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. For more information about the show, check us out at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Let's get back to the Sound of Music tour with Peter von Wertheim. Do you think people are able to, so you said the landscape in general could help someone kind of work through that illusion, and they get taken by the alpine landscape, the beautiful mountains and lakes, especially here now we're at the Lake District. What do you think of that personal experience for someone coming in on the tour? I like to use the word pilgrimage as kind of, this is a film pilgrimage, but maybe even more so than a film pilgrimage. They're not just coming to see the scenes where, or the places where the scenes were filmed, but they're coming to maybe see part of their own selves here, right?
Well, sometimes I have the impression for a lot of guests, especially the individual travelers going with our private tours, that it is for them an inner retreat, a retreat back to childhood, a retreat back to the emotions of the youth and of the childhood. And sometimes it is a calm moment where people meditate, where am I standing now in my life, going back to my childhood? And I made the experience, because it was very interesting for me to analyze what moves people for Sound of Music and that strong emotional approach. And I found out for a lot of people, during the childhood, it was Sound of Music was their second life. It was filling in for a sane childhood, and sometimes they felt understood by Maria's story. Maria was an orphaned girl. Some people experienced during the childhood orphancy, or they have the problem of a patchwork family, or family life is not so happy all over, and then they enjoy to escape into the scenes of the film and identify themselves with the Trump kids in the film, and they feel that Julie Andrews, being the strong mother of the kids, so lovely with the kids, is a consolation for them. And they escape into this world of Sound of Music. And that, for me, explains the strong emotional approach. Sometimes, if you don't know about people, you would think it's a bit overdone or hyper-emotional. But when you go back to their biographic background, you can understand why. So it has a healing impact for the inner game, I would say.
Yeah, and so Maria, Julie Andrews' character, maybe is that governess for them as well.
Yes, definitely. And sometimes they have then the courage to go on music. You know, sometimes children are very shy with singing and performing in front of others. And then they say, yeah, the Trapp family did that. And in the film scenes, you can see that when they start to sing, and they say, okay, we join now. We join singing. And very often the Sound of Music melodies are the first melodies at school where pupils start to sing. And I had a music teacher with me, and the lady told me, you know, Sound of Music is a perfect educational tool towards music.
For a lot of these people kind of coming on that pilgrimage, what might be one of their favorite parts of the tour?
Well, the ladies are highly attracted by the wedding scenes. So Basilica St. Michael's, the interior of the church walking down the aisle of the Abbey, is an outstanding experience for them. And I would say for the gentlemen, it is to learn about the father, Captain Trapp, his way, how to live. He was a typical Austrian-Hungarian officer, a very lovely, loving and caring father. He is a bit the opposite of this stiff, superior-feeling type of Christopher Plummer. And so it's very interesting for them to learn how was family life of the real Trapp family and how was the captain, and to understand Austria, to know details about the story, about the truth. That is for them, I think, the interesting moment, combined with the experience of landscape and to learn about Austrian lifestyle.
Yeah, and to learn it through this von Trapp yes. family. And people are concerned with the accuracy of the details of the von Trapp family.
Well, I noticed at first they want to prove all the details they know about the film. Some of them seem to have inhaled the film scenes, and they have a list. I want to go through my checklist. This is this and this is that. But all of a sudden, I'm able to change their mind so that they approach now Sound of Music holistically. So they get more. I would say at the very end, the result is more what they get out. They get the most out of it.
So you're the tour guide, but you're also kind of guiding people through what can be an emotional experience too.
Definitely. That's the challenge for a tour guide, the emotional communication, and I call it infotainment. It's not up to the time to bore people to death with unnecessary details. You have to create a holistic picture of history, lifestyle, background, and so that people can associate with things in a global world. It has to be set into a context of a modern global world. That's the challenge as a tour guide, I would say.
Yeah. Peter did a great thing, I think, when we came over the mountains from Salzburg here to Wolfgang See, in putting on music for us to hear from the actual voices of the von Trapps. And as we walked, or as we drove through kind of a narrow road, farm road, through dairy farms, and let us just kind of absorb into that landscape. And I think that's a very much an important part of a tour, and not be inundated by information. So I wanted to thank Peter again for the tour and for speaking with us at Geographical Imaginations. And if you're ever in town, to look up Peter at Bob's Special Tours and take a different kind of tour, a little bit more, a little quieter. We're in a smaller van, and we get to see a little bit closer the landscape of Sound of Music, but the landscape of the Alps here in Austria. Thank you, Peter.
I thank you for the interview and that you have joined me to the world of Sound of Music, and I would appreciate to welcome anybody interested in the world of Sound of Music. Thank you.
Thanks. You're listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. For more information about the show, check us out at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Tonight, we're talking about Sound of Music pilgrimages, coming here to Salzburg to check out the sights and walk in Maria's footsteps.
Maria von Trapp is the main character in The Sound of Music, which was based on an actual event and an actual person. The actual Maria von Trapp herself was said to have visited the set while they were filming it, and she looks nothing like Julie Andrews or even Mary Martin, who played the stage version of the musical. And she's an icon because her metaphysical journey is everyone's journey, because she embodied courage, faith, perseverance, and other qualities projected onto her by film audiences. So her life becomes our life because she practically controls each scene of the movie, save for some, you know, throwaway scenes involving Rolf and Liesel, the nun singing "How do you solve the problem like Maria?" But even then, Maria hijacked that scene at the end and she came in, right? And then they continued singing that song. But Maria herself, Maria von Trapp, has become an icon because of what she went through and fortitude, you know, the ability to withstand so much stress and hardship and come out of it as a survivor is a testament to the timelessness of the character and, of course, of the film with which she appeared. So it was necessary to show the escape of the von Trapps to the Alpines at the end, not only to bookend the first scene, right? Remember the first scene where Maria was singing The Sound of Music? And the last scene was them crossing the Alps to escape the Nazis. But also to show her own life. This is her own life. Therefore, Maria is some kind of a map of the movie. The map usually is, as we traditionally know, is a graphical representation of the Earth, how the Earth gets translated into something visual. But what if we imagine Maria as a map and that we travel through her? Her life becomes our own life. We can project a what you would probably call a post-cartographic mapping to Sound of Music by using Maria as the ultimate map that shows the landscape, which, of course, is the story. Tom Conley has written this book called Cartographic Cinema, and that's where I got the inspiration to talk about a revised version of it, the post-cartographic mapping involving Maria as the character, as the map, and as a person who somehow typifies our life in ways that we project.
I think it's quite an interesting idea to think of Maria as a map in some ways. She embodies the landscape, perhaps. And it's this landscape, the Alpine one, but also, I think, this interior one that our tour guests or other tour members spoke to us about, but also which Peter spoke to us about as well in his experience many years giving tours. I want to shift and ask Joseph Pylas a little bit more about other ways we can kind of think about it. What are people doing when they go on a Sound of Music tour? So let's hear a little bit more from Joseph.
There is a concept developed by a scholar from Harvard University. Her name is Juliana Bruno. She wrote this book called Streetwalking on a Ruined Map, which is about trying to recover the lost films of this filmmaker, Elvira Notari. Inferential walking allows Juliana Bruno to retrace the steps that was taken by Elvira Notari and try to imagine the filming process that happened. In the case of The Sound of Music, most of the film audience and film tourists who go to Salzburg would retrace the steps and see for themselves the actual places with which songs were supposedly filmed. In the case of Do Re Mi, which is one of the more popular songs in The Sound of Music, even if the topography changes behind Maria and the children while they were traversing the public space of Salzburg, it doesn't really matter because the song flows seamlessly. So when people go to certain places and try to remember that this has been one of those places wherein Do Re Mi was shot or was filmed, they try to sing the song in their heads. I feel that the Sound of Music fans are doing this revised version of inferential walking when they do that. where they put themselves in the character's shoes and what the characters were inhibiting in the said spaces in the film. Do you remember that Rocky film with Sylvester Stallone? I know a lot of people who usually would go to that actual place where he would raise his hand in that iconic pose and do exactly what he did. And that is because the power of the place reminds people of the actual place it was filmed. So the actual space itself in which it was filmed may be innocuous at the time, but it achieves a certain iconic status, or almost like a cult because of that. And people usually recognize that quite well and try to imagine themselves in it.
And it's there we end this episode about The Sound of Music, our own pilgrimage, our own journey to walk in Maria's footsteps. I want to thank Peter von Bertheim for taking us on the tour. Also want to thank the other tour guests that I accompanied along the way, and wanted to thank them. They asked to remain anonymous, and so I honor that. But thank them for sharing with me and with the audience some of their maybe more intimate details of their lives and what this film has meant to them. I want to remind you to check us out at www.geographicalimaginations.org. This episode will be posted there in the episodes section. But also to check out our blog as we continue to create more sort of content and have a series of question and answers with geographers working in the field, trained and non-trained, kind of following this idea that everyone can be a geographer and explore the spaces and places in and around them and those spaces and places that affect their daily lives. So with that, I again wanted to thank in Salzburg, Bob Special Tours for arranging the tour and being so generous to respond to our request. And we really enjoyed going out for the day with them and seeing all the sights. As you could probably heard the snow on the footsteps as we were walking around. It was back in the beginning of February. So this was in the middle of winter here in Salzburg in the north of the Alps, and so there was plenty of snow on the ground, and so that's what we were hearing all along. But without anything else to say, look forward to next month's episode. Next month's episode will be about remembering places remembering heritage that you'd rather forget, and we have a few examples from Budapest here in Austria, and then North Carolina in the United States. So stay tuned for that. And thanks again. Ciao.